ideal terms, it's time to wind down the war. I have not met a single person who's told me, yes, the pain has gotten to the point where we have to seek a way out. Now, the one thing that the Ukrainians have to bear in mind is if the war drags on into next year, and the United States, which is the main funder of the war, because the number two country, Germany, gives only about a tenth of what the United States gives, will the United States at some point conclude that it cannot continue supplying the war, and will there be pressure on Ukraine to come to terms? That is what the thing that I think could force the Ukrainians to the table, because without American support, they simply cannot continue the war.
Rajan Menon, we want to thank you for being with us. Director of the Grand Strategy Program at Defense Priorities. He recently returned from visiting Ukraine. His books include Conflict in Ukraine, The Unwinding of the Post-Cold War Order. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Health Plan has a data breach exposing information of 1.7 million individuals.
Toxic cyanobacteria are found in water near the St. John's Bridge, with health experts warning of its dangers.
And in national news, Idaho's new abortion ban across the state, Borders faces a legal challenge.
Good evening. This... Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023. I'm Laura Miller.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. The data breach of over 1.7 million Oregon Health Plan clients is now at risk because of that breach by hackers. This is the second time this year that Oregonians' information has been at risk because of one of the major tech companies involved. Grant Button has more.
Personal information from 1.7 million Oregon Health Plan clients was hacked in a data breach. Hackers breached the computer system of a technology contractor to the Oregon Health Plan, or OHP, gaining access to the personal information of as many as 1.7 million clients. PH Tech is a company that helps manage member data for OHP members. They said on Tuesday that a coordinated attack by hackers led to the breach. The hackers broke into the PH Tech computer system through a security vulnerability in Progress Move It software, a software system used by multiple state agencies. This is the second time hackers have accessed Oregonians' personal information through that software. In June, the Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, was hacked through that software too, exposing data from 3.5 million Oregon driver's licenses. Dave Baden is an interim director at the OHP. He said, quote, "We're urging OHP members to activate credit monitoring as a precaution. It's disheartening that bad actors are looking to exploit people in our state and that their actions create a burden for others who have had more than enough to manage already. However, there are important steps that OHP members can take to further protect their data," end quote. Officials encourage OHP members to request a free credit report, follow instructions to activate 12 months of free identity theft protection, and contact PH Tech for assistance if needed. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Bunn.
legal challenges could stop an Idaho law meant to keep people under age 18 from traveling across state lines for abortion care. Opponents contend the law is unconstitutional. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
An Idaho law that bans interstate travel for abortion care to people under age 18 is facing legal challenges. This week, a federal judge barred Attorney General Raul Labrador from enforcing part of the law that stops medical providers from referring patients across state lines for care. Another injunction was also filed to stop the law this week. Wendy Hyped is with Legal Voice, one of the organizations behind the injunction. She says the law attempts to reach across state borders to stop people from getting care that is legal in other states.
It offends the right to travel, both travel within Idaho and travel across state lines, which you cannot restrict for Americans because you don't like what they're going to do. You can't tell them they can't drive somewhere because you don't like what they're driving to do.
Hyped says this is unconstitutional. She also contends that it violates the First Amendment and is too vague. Violators of the law currently face 2 to 5 years in prison. Backers of the law say it is meant to support parents' rights. Hyped says the law causes the most harm to marginalized communities.
I'm talking about people who are subjected to violence, people who are in unsafe homes, people who have to travel further and therefore will get care later in their pregnancies. And those people are further harmed by this law.
Legal Voice's challenge to the law has received support from 20 attorneys general, led by Bob Ferguson in Washington, who filed a friend of the court brief in the case on Tuesday. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
As you may have heard, former President Donald Trump was indicted again yesterday, this time for 4 crimes. Conspiracy to violate Americans' right to vote, conspiracy to defraud the government, obstructing an official proceeding, and conspiring to do so. Special Counsel Jack Smith led the Justice Department investigation. He said, quote, "The January 6th attack on the Capitol was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election. Unlike Trump's 2 other indictments for hush money payments and mishandling of classified documents, these charges are mainly arising from actions he took while he was president. The indictment said Trump had 6 co-conspirators, and while they were not named, Justice Department official Jeffrey Clark and lawyers Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell are widely considered to be among them." Judge Tanya Chutkan was randomly assigned to the case. She has overseen trials of the January 6th rioters and has doled out the harshest sentences for those offenders. Judge Chutkan has ruled against Trump before when he tried to block documents from being released to the House Special January 6th Investigation Committee back in 2021. She held in that case, quote, "Presidents are not kings, and the plaintiff is not president." A 4th indictment of Trump for trying to change election results in Georgia is expected later this month.
Health officials urge individuals to refrain from swimming or high-speed water activities due to cyanotoxins found near the St. John's Bridge. Grant Button has more on the story.
People should not swim, water ski, or powerboat near Portland's St. John's neighborhood. On Friday, health officials warned of a toxic cyanobacteria bloom in the waters north of the St. John's Bridge. They say people should avoid swimming and high-speed water activities in this area since ingesting water that contains cyanotoxins poses a serious risk to human health. Drinking water with cyanotoxins is especially dangerous because it cannot be removed even with boiling, filtering, or even treating the water. Cyanotoxins can cause a range of symptoms, from ones similar to food poisoning to more serious ones such as numbness, dizziness, and shortness of breath. Children and pets are at an increased risk for exposure because of their size and activity levels. In fact, the cyanotoxins can kill dogs within minutes to hours of exposure, even if dogs are just licking their fur. The toxins are not absorbed through the skin, but can cause puffy rashes in some cases. The blooms are most frequently bright green but can be blue, brown, or red as well. They typically form in warm, slow-moving waters that are rich in nutrients from sources like fertilizer runoff. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, as cyanobacteria in a bloom die, the water may smell bad, similar to rotting plants. Public health officials plan to continue sampling water next week to better define the geographic span of the health warning and how long it might go on for. People should be aware that the bloom might have originated upstream of Willamette Cove and could have spread farther downstream than Cathedral Park. They say boating is safe in affected areas as long as speeds do not create noticeable water spray. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
Workers' rights advocates worry about Texas laws restricting breaks during heat waves. The State Department launches a global health bureau, and more about the third indictment of former President Trump. With these stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6th, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies.
Former President Donald Trump has been indicted for his role in overturning the 2020 election. He is charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding, and conspiracy against rights. Trump has argued it's an attempt by the government to disrupt his campaign for the GOP presidential nomination in 2024, for which he is the leading candidate. It is the former president's third indictment this year. New York Attorney General Letitia James' civil fraud case against him goes to trial in the fall. As sweltering heat continues to bake the U.S., workers' rights groups are concerned about a new law in Texas reversing local ordinances requiring 10-minute breaks every 4 hours for people working outside. More than 110 congressional lawmakers wrote the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, urging them to implement a federal workplace heat standard. But Julie Fulcher with Public Citizen, a nonprofit consumer rights group, says OSHA needs an interim and permanent rule as soon as possible.
OSHA is currently working on developing a workplace heat standard. However, on average, it takes OSHA about 7 to 8 years to do a rule from beginning to end. They are working on it, they're chugging along, but we're at least a couple of years out from getting a rule.
Legal challenges have been mounted against Idaho's law banning interstate travel for abortion care for people under age 18. In particular, a federal judge barred enforcement of part of the law, which stops medical providers from referring patients across state lines for care. Wendy Hyped, senior reproductive rights counsel with Legal Voice, which worked to file an injunction, says the law is unconstitutional.
It offends the right to travel, both travel within Idaho and travel across state lines, which you cannot restrict for Americans because you don't like what they're going to do. You can't tell them they can't drive somewhere because you don't like what they're driving to do.
The U.S. State Department has launched a Bureau of Global Health Security and Diplomacy. The Bureau's mission is to take action on infectious diseases spreading, a goal underscored by the COVID-19 pandemic and the spread of HIV/AIDS across the globe. Ambassador-at-Large Dr. John Nkengasong will head the new Bureau.
Therefore, launching this Bureau comes at a critical point because, as others have said, we recognize that the frequency of the health threats are increasing because of the greater connectivity, globalization, climate change, population growth, food insecurity, and many others.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A man was fatally stabbed in a suspected hate crime at a gas station in Brooklyn, New York. O'Shea Sibley was a gay African-American man and a professional dancer. While at a Brooklyn gas station, Sibley and his friends blasted music by Beyoncé while voguing, a type of dance that expresses pride and protection for LGBTQ people. Sibley and his friends were approached by a group of men who told them to stop dancing while using slurs. Sibley confronted them. According to police, the argument escalated and one man stabbed Sibley. One of Sibley's best friends, Otis Pena, pressed on Sibley's wound to stop the bleeding before he was taken to the hospital. Sibley was later pronounced dead. Pena said in a Facebook video, quote, "They murdered him because he's gay, because he stood up for his friends. His name was O'Shea and you all killed him. You all murdered him right in front of me." No arrests have been made, but the police say the hate crimes unit is involved in investigation. There has been an increase in harassment and violence against gay and transgender people, according to the Anti-Defamation League. In the first 3 weeks of June, there were 101 such incidents, more than twice the number during the same time period the year before. Pena said, quote, We as a community don't deserve this. We may be gay, but we exist. We're not going to live in fear. We're not going to live hiding.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his new article, Slowly Driving Change. Vehicle crashes have killed 43 people in Portland this year. Is it a public health emergency? Then at 6 o'clock, it's Exploration with Michio Kaku. At 7, it's the Global Sale. Then at 8, it's Drinking from Puddles. Your weather forecast, clear and 72 tonight. More sunshine and a high of 87 on Thursday. Today in history, members of the Second Continental Congress began attaching their signatures to the Declaration of Independence. While they adopted the Declaration on July 4th, 1776, as you know, delegates did not begin signing it until August 2nd. The quote of the day is from Benjamin Franklin, American writer, scientist, inventor, and political philosopher, among other things. He signed the Declaration of Independence today alongside 56 others. He said, quote, "Lost time is never found again."
The United Nations in New York and the Rochester Museum and Science Center are holding a ceremony tomorrow to repatriate the remains of 19 tribal ancestors. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Oneida Nation in New York and the Rochester Museum and Science Center are holding a ceremony Wednesday to repatriate the remains of 19 tribal ancestors. The remains from the museum's collections are believed to have been interred during various periods between 200 and 3,000 years ago. The remains and funerary objects were removed from at least six burial sites in New York State. According to the museum, they were acquired through excavation, donation, and purchased in the late 1920s and the late 70s. Wednesday's repatriation follows the return of 25 remains in 2000. Tribal leaders and museum officials are expected to take part in the repatriation ceremony. A five-year, $50 million grant project aims to reduce the carbon footprint of potato farming across the Pacific Northwest. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, regional tribes are partners.
Oregon State University is using the grant to explore practices to improve soil health and crop outcomes. Jeffrey Steiner of OSU's Global Hemp Innovation Center is the project leader.
It may incorporate things like cover crops, less disturbance practices such as no-till or reduced tillage practices. It may mean nutrient management or nutrient monitoring.
One of the project partners is the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho. Shelby Layton, its business operations manager, says they're looking forward to learning more.
We will see how we can implement these climate smart practices and make sure our agricultural practices prioritize soil health and increase crop production, kind of do things for the environment.
Other tribal partners are the Yakima and Colville tribes. The USDA says Oregon, Washington, and Idaho grow 62% of the nation's potatoes, which have an annual value of $2.2 billion. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The National Endowment for the Humanities announced Tuesday funding opportunities for federally recognized tribes for projects to expand the reach and impact of the Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative. The initiative, launched by the Department of the Interior, is investigating U.S. Indian boarding schools and collecting testimony. The endowment is offering $30,000 grants for research, community engagement, tribal history collection, public programs, and educational projects on the impacts of Indian boarding school policies on tribal communities. NEH Chair Shelley Lowe says the boarding school system left deep and lasting scars, and NEH hopes through the grants, opportunities can be created for healing. Applications will be accepted on a rolling basis through December 1st. Nonprofits and state and local government organizations that work with tribal communities may be eligible for funding. The Ontario Native Women's Association held a virtual event this week to help raise awareness about human trafficking, as the United Nations recognized World Day Against Trafficking in Persons. This year, the association is launching an affirmation deck for community members and survivors of human trafficking. Amy Short is the group's mental health and addictions anti-human trafficking liaison.
Through years of supporting Indigenous women and communities in combating sexual exploitation, we have come to understand that one of the most effective preventative methods is to empower individuals through a strength-based approach that affirms their own sacredness.
Short says the affirmation deck is one tool that can be used in personal and communal practice to switch the narrative of Indigenous women as victims to survivors, knowledge keepers, healers, and leaders. The deck will feature daily affirmations, journal prompts, quotes, and activities for users. According to the Ontario Native Women's Association, Ontario remains a hub for human trafficking in Canada, and Indigenous women and girls are disproportionately impacted and targeted. The association advocates, educates, and offers culturally grounded support to survivors. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Back home in Oregon, our Governor Tina Kotek had a busy day signing bills about students, schools, and affordable child care into law today. One of those bills is HB 3144, the Native Law Hawaiian and Pacific Islander Student Success Plan. It invests over $2 million to improve access to educational opportunities for these students. The law addresses the disproportionate rate of discipline Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander students face and encourages parental engagement, after-school activities, and improving literacy levels. Senator Casey Jama is a Democrat from Portland. He said, quote, "When students start falling through the cracks, the whole system suffers. By acknowledging that our education system was not built to serve Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander students and working to better serve them, we will make a huge impact on those students' lives and the lives of their families and peers." House Bill 2281 ensures civil rights are protected in schools by adding a designated civil rights coordinator to each district. The passage comes on the heels of an uptick in discrimination complaints in public education. The Oregon Department of Education measured a 450% surge in discrimination complaints in the past few years. SB 1050 implements state standards for ethnic studies and Holocaust and genocide studies. Senate President Rob Wagner said of the passage, quote, "Young people must learn about compassion and understanding, and teaching about the atrocities of the past will help empower the future leaders to ensure that those never happen again." Governor Kotek also signed bills to improve child care deserts across the state, strengthening efforts that teach kids to read and better the conditions for teachers in the workplace.
U.S.-Mexico border control officers have a pattern of human rights abuses. That's according to a new report released today by the Washington Office on Latin America, or WOLA, and the Kino Border Initiative, or KBI. It details a pattern of misuse of lethal force, intimidation, sexual harassment, and falsifying documents. The authors of this report write, quote, "The lack of accountability is so widespread that it helps cement in place a culture that enables human rights violations. The abuses keep coming because impunity is so likely." In fact, KBI tracked 78 complaints filed on behalf of migrants from 2010 to 2022 and found that 95% led to no proper investigation. Only 1% of complaints resulted in disciplinary action. In 2020, KBI received 442 reports of alleged abuse by U.S. agents, meaning that 18% of new arrivals reported experiencing abuse by a U.S. authority. WOLA has its own database of complaints of alleged abuse or improper conduct, currently at 409 cases. The report discusses multiple failure points within the accountability process and offers over 40 recommendations for solutions. WOLA and KBI concluded that, quote, "The examples of abuse and unprofessional behavior documented in this report are unacceptable. They are unacceptable in their frequency and in the severity of their cruelty."
If you've been hearing about the heat wave in the American Southwest, you might be interested to know that Austin and Dallas are the only places in Texas with protections for workers at construction sites, requiring 10-minute breaks every 4 hours. Those protections will go away in September because of a law signed by Texas Governor Greg Abbott that overrules all local laws that exceed state requirements. Texas Congressman Greg Kassar went on a 9-hour thirst strike on the steps of the U.S. Capitol last week in protest. He said, quote, "This bill could kill workers, and it shows that Governor Abbott's putting profits over the people that have entrusted him with this job." Only 6 states have regulations to protect outdoor workers from extreme heat. Those are Oregon, California, Colorado, Maryland, Nevada, and Washington. The issue may find footing on the federal level, however. Extreme heat events are becoming more common, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, is considering interim rules to protect workers from extreme heat.
Today is Earth Overshoot Day. That's the day humanity has used more resources than the Earth can restore in 1 year. And it's 5 days earlier than last year. The first Earth Overshoot Day in 1971 was Christmas. Steve Tebbe is the CEO of Global Footprint Network, the organization that calculates Earth Overshoot Day. He said, quote, "Persistent overshoot leads to ever more prominent symptoms, including unusual heat waves, forest fires, droughts, and floods with the risk of compromising food production." Actions that would have the most positive effect on resource consumption would be slashing global emissions, cutting food waste, and replacing miles driven by car with public transportation, bicycles, and walking. There are specific proposals like 15-minute cities, where most of one's needs could be met in a 15-minute walk or bike ride. Also, onshore wind turbines and a Green New Deal. In a statement, Greenpeace International said of Overshoot Day, quote, "The broken economic system is designed for the elite, but it can be redesigned to put people and nature at the forefront."
A new joint report from American University, the Every Town for Gun Safety Support Fund, and the Southern Poverty Law Center finds that almost 3/4 of young people believe gun violence is a problem in the United States. Suzanne Potter has more on that story.
Some 74% of young people in the U.S. believe gun violence is a problem, and 60% want to see stricter gun laws. That's according to a new report from American University, the Every Town for Gun Safety Support Fund, and the Southern Poverty Law Center. Researchers polled a representative sample of 4,100 people ages 14 to 30. Wyatt Russell with American University says this generation, raised in an era where mass shootings are ubiquitous, is very worried about school safety, which also contributes to a rise in anxiety and depression.
The average young person knows at least one other person who's been injured or killed by a gun. We've seen an astonishingly high 25% of youth have been in an active shooter lockdown, not a drill, a lockdown.
A study from the Kaiser Family Foundation also found that gun violence was the leading cause of death for kids under age 17 in 2020 and 2021, more than any other type of injury or illness, the highest rate in the developed world. Opponents of stricter gun laws cite concerns about personal freedom and self-defense. Russell notes the survey found a correlation between a young person's identification with gun culture, support for male supremacy, higher levels of racial resentment, and post-traumatic stress disorder.
We're working to develop some inoculation strategies to help young people stop harmful mis- and disinformation, conspiratorial thinking, and supremacist ideologies that can influence gun violence, more specifically extremist violence as well.
40% of young people in the survey said they have somewhat easy access to a gun, and 21% reported having very easy access. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Well, it's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael. Tonight, Dan is worried about August's hot start.
I dread August, the usual drought and heat, this time starting with fire-nados in California. Phoenix wanting to switch to Celsius. The numbers are smaller and less scary. While in the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico, the water is hot enough to bleach the coral and the shrimp are caught already cooked. Yes, this last July was the world's hottest month on record, but how long will that record last? Ukraine's trying to turn the offensive heat back to Russia. With August starting with his third indictment and at least one more this month, the heat's beginning to simmer under Donny. That's how you cook an orange lobster, bumping the heat up in steps. And the New York Times yesterday, with a long photo essay, put more heat on Portland to do something about the open-air fentanyl market downtown. We want people visiting Portland for the natural and cultural beauty, not for the cheap and dangerous drugs. Maybe time to put some heat on the police to do something about the drugs coming in. That part's still illegal. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and David Rosenberg. The producer is Grant Button, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Laura Miller.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. We can't do this without you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. Have a great night.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I'm speaking with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his new article, Slowly Driving Change. Vehicle crashes have killed 43 people in Portland this year. Is it a public health emergency? Welcome, Jeremiah.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. So your article takes a broad look at the high rate of traffic deaths that Portland has been seeing and what city government and the Portland Bureau of Transportation, or PBOT, can do about it. So why don't we start there? What is PBOT's role in shaping the conditions on Portland streets?